Hey everyone, this is Paul Siegel, and you're listening to Wandering DMs. Wandering DMs comes to you live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern, and you can catch us on twitch.tv/wanderingdms or youtube.com/wanderingdms/live. And now, on with the show. Stream. I'm Paul.
And I'm Dan, and today we're going to be talking about Infravision, a hot issue. Yeah.
Oh, geez. Dan, this conversation comes out of our game that we played a couple weeks ago. Now we did a live streamed game for 24 hours over my birthday, over a couple of days for my birthday.
Yeah, it was a lot of D&D with me on the receiving end of it.
Yeah, it was a great game, a lot of fun. It's you can see it on our YouTube channel if you didn't manage to catch it. I made a playlist for it. YouTube.com/wanderingdms. Check that out. I just a quick cap to that for anybody who was watching and saw me spill water all over my DM's valet, and it like went into every pocket, and it just got like it just soaked a lot of material. Fortunately, a lot of stuff that was printed out that I have digital copies of, so I could reprint. But the one thing that I bemoaned sort of ruining was my copy of Book of War, which I bought, I think, from Lulu or something, or maybe you gave it to me a while back, Dan. Anyway, I just wanted to share with viewers this nice gift that Dan sent me afterwards. Let's see, if you can't read the note there, it says, "Suffer losses in a naval engagement? Here's reinforcements." Thanks for everything, Dan. Yes, so thank you so much for sending that, Dan. I'm glad to have a nice copy of Book of War. For anybody who doesn't know what that is, Dan, what's Book of War?
It's my, over like 10 years, really minimal, really easy to play mass combat for D&D with computer simulations to get the prices right, and you can use all your basic D&D stats and immediately start playing a solution to the mass combat problem that a lot of us have had for a long time. Yeah. And I get really great comments on it, which is fantastic.
Absolutely. If you're running any kind of old school D&D and you have that situation where the orcs are invading the village and the players are going to take part in the mass combat defense of the village or something like that,
all right. You were, Paul, instrumental in reading that before I released it. So I'm when that was the thing that got hit midway through the game, I was also sad about that.
So
I was a little surprised by how, as a player, I was a little briefly surprised at how you run Infravision, which is different from how I do. We had like a 2-minute discussion, I think, that day, which just piqued my curiosity.
Yeah.
After the fact, I was reading up on kind of the history of it. I posted a poll in a couple of places where original D&D players frequent. And then in the last week, that actually started spawning multiple other discussions, and I've seen at least two or three old school bloggers talking about Infravision in the last day or two, entirely having been spawned off our game session, actually. So it's a thing that in this incredibly hot July week, it's all of a sudden become a thing. partly thanks to us, I think.
So just for anybody who watched the stream, I think I fairly quickly, like, we had a moment of disconnect where I was like, "What? You think what?" And then I said, "You know what? Most of my players here at the table are used to playing with Dan at the helm, because they're all playing in your weekly game." So I thought, I'm gonna rule it the way Dan rules it, just to grease the wheels and move along.
And that right there, if I can focus on like just how to be a DM, is like that actually is something that would honestly not occur to me, frankly. And that is a great choice while you're running a game there to make the pace fast.
Yeah,
before we go on.
I think kudos to you
for that choice.
Yeah, I think it's key. I think you always got to have your eye on pacing, and you just got to make choices at the table. You know, a thing I tell my players a lot when I'm running fifth is, I'm likely to get the rules wrong because I've done OD&D for so long. I'm likely to get things wrong. We're going to run with it, after the session, you can email me and tell me the right rules, and I'll get it right next time.
Yep, perfect.
And I'm not slowing down the game so we can have a discussion.
And I'll also say that, Paul, you asked the players before we started playing what they wanted for a critical hits rule.
Yeah.
And I was like, what are you doing? And it really made me kind of reassess afterwards whether I ought to do some stuff like that, because it would never have crossed my mind to not just lay down the law.
In that case, for critical effects, what happens when you roll a natural 1 or a natural 20? I've played with people with a lot of very different opinions, enough so now that I don't think I can predict with any group what they're going to like. So I ask.
Great.
Cool.
So anyway, here's the curvature. Yeah. So I dug into a little history, and I don't know if it's helpful to put up that document that I sent you a couple minutes ago or not. But what the discovery was, to my surprise, and that there's a poll that I posted to the Pro Boards, original D&D discussion there. And interestingly, in the original D&D Little Brown Books, it's ambiguous. It doesn't actually say one way or the other for dwarves and elves, and it kind of has the implication that they really don't want people seeing very well. So here I am asking OD&D players whether dwarves and elves get infravision. To my surprise, most of them on that board are voting no.
After our game, I definitely went back and looked at the original source myself and was likewise surprised to find that the original LBBs don't have it, though I think it is mentioned in S1.
Yeah. Now, see, everything else says yes. So previous to that, in Chainmail, there's a note that dwarves and elves can definitely see in darkness like normal light. And so you can make an argument that the original D&D incorporates that by reference. And some people say, as you can see, some people are saying yes, some people are saying no. So the book before it said they could see in the darkness. Mm-hmm. The book the next year, the first supplement, explicitly said they get infravision and, specifically use that word. All the other classic editions, first edition, second edition, BX, all specifically say they get infravision and can see in the dark just like normal.
Do you want me to throw up that other image you sent me? I didn't have enough time to even look at what it was. Is it appropriate here? Yeah,
let's say yes.
Okay, great. Okay, I thought this was what it is. Okay,
maybe the viewer screenshots that and takes a look at it. So interestingly, it's sort of like they've been dialing back on that slowly over 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
So with first edition, the book, the players' books say they can see perfectly well in the dark, just like normal. And then the DM's guide starts to give this additional detail about like how thermal imaging works, and maybe you want to do this and maybe you don't, and maybe monsters are better at it.
Yep.
And in second edition, you have these two explicit options. You can either interpret infravision as hand wavy you just see, or a lot of scientific detail that you probably don't want to get into. And then third edition, they don't call it infravision anymore. They call it dark vision, and it's purely just hand wavy. But again, dwarves can just see perfectly fine with no light. And then now with fifth edition, they're still calling it dark vision, but it's not perfectly normal sight. It's kind of crappy, murky when you don't have light.
Yep.
So it seems like they've been very slowly putting that dial down over 30 years away from you can just see everything perfectly fine.
I mean, interestingly, game mechanics aside, I wonder about the aspect of how much fantasy versus how much science do you want here? Mm-hmm. And I wonder too about like the change from infravision to dark vision is are we just following the current popular technology, right? Like in the 60s or 70s, when this was being written, so thermal imaging maybe was in people's consciousness to some degree. It was fancy high end technology at that time, right?
You're right. Gary's son, Ernie Gygax, specifically said a couple months ago that what Gary was looking at was specifically the original movie, Westworld, that came out in 1973, the year before original D&D. And little trivia note here, Westworld was the first movie to use computer graphic images, computer-generated images, specifically for the thermal vision of the android characters. little trivia that I found out in the last week.
And that was a plot point, right, in that particular movie that they played with.
Correct.
So anyway, I mean, these days, I think modern days, when you see some, night vision goggles, right? Night vision goggles are now the thing, right? And night vision goggles, of course, are not thermal imaging. They're simply taking very low levels of light and enhancing them, and you get your kind of classic greeny, colorless or green scale image.
Yep.
Right. And that's sort of prevalent now, I think, in most media, as sort of the way you see in the dark. And so maybe dark vision is trying to emulate that, maybe?
Well, that's an interesting take on it. I'll search for like hunting sites, and they are still debating, should you get thermal imaging or should you get night vision goggles?
Yep.
And advantage of this versus advantage of that. So that's an interesting take. That's not something that would have crossed my mind. Maybe you're right about that.
It's a thought. I don't know how much it is or is not true. And frankly, I always liked the switch from infravision to dark vision because in my opinion, I would rather eschew all of the technological answers and just say, it's magic, it's fantasy, don't worry about it. Dwarves and elves can see in the dark.
It's an interesting subpoint on this issue because, there's a lot of, you can possibly point to a lot of sci-fi elements baked into original D&D, right? You got ESP, you got clairvoyance, you got disintegration, you got teleportation. They very quickly wanted to add psionics, right?
Yep.
So there's kind of this gumbo. And if you look at the pulp literature, it's a really common theme of modern day man transported to fantasy world and is now interpreting everything he sees in terms of science. Mm-hmm. So that is sort of like a 30s pulp literature theme. And you might be right, as we progress and we look at current media, maybe that's less of a thing that we want.
Personally, for my own tastes, I really dislike going down the rabbit hole of what is the science explanation for this magical effect. Because it gets complicated really fast, and you start getting those arguments like, can a person who's cast invisibility on themselves see because their eyes are invisible and therefore no longer, absorbing light?
Right.
Let's not have that discussion. It's... Not
there's a strong point of that. I thought, at least at one point, I thought ability, you can take it too far and it turns into a huge burden.
Well, and then, now this segues into the whole question I have, which is ultimately all of these things, light, infravision, invisibility, all play into what can the player see, right? It's all ultimately comes down to who can see who, right? And
that was a big part of our game last week, right? So over the 24 hours of play, a whole lot of light, blindness, see it, don't see it was a major part of the game.
Right, right. And, sorry, now where was I going with that? Shoot. I think it was exacerbated in our game, right, because you were playing all elves plus one dwarf, so you had, everybody had infravision. Everybody could see in the dark. And then, we spells like pyrotechnics or invisibility come into play. Where was I going with
I think general vision, who can see who?
General, right. Okay, so the immediate research I started doing when we started talking about infravision was, well, let's talk about light, right? How far can you see without infravision? What light sources exist? And that's also murky. And I thought originally I was going to go through all the books and try to find out who, in what editions did it specify exactly ranges of light for various light sources. Fortunately, I found a blog post where somebody figured that out all for me. In 2009, this fellow named Delta posted to his blog all that research. Thank you.
Now, there are times when I Google search a D&D topic, right? It's like, I don't know about this, and the top hit is my blog, and then I go, well, that guy's not going to help me.
Well, this one was very helpful. So, of course, OD&D, and I think anything prior to first edition AD&D simply doesn't say, right? Torches, lanterns, candles, they create light, whatever. And then you start to get stuff where maybe it's 30 feet or 60 feet or 120 feet and stuff varies. And I think the thesis of your post was how surprised you were about how short it was and how over time it's been shrinking. And that now these days, most games say that most editions of D&D, newer editions, say that a torch is 20 feet and a lantern is 30 feet. Yep. And then infravision, dark vision, whatever, gets you 60. Yes. And then there's the complexity of, like, there's also the second tier of whatever, of dimly lit whatever after that. And I agreed with your analysis back in 2009, which is, that's just too complicated to deal with, and I don't want to think about that. Okay, so I like those ranges. I like 20-foot torchlight, and I like 30-foot lantern light, and one of the things I don't like about infravision is that it's 60 feet. I think 60 feet doesn't play well. 60 feet of vision is not good for the game, is my assertion.
That's interesting. I think, like, and there was a gentleman that actually did practical experiment in the last year, like, put all the lights out in his in his house, shut all the windows, and used a lamp or something like that. And it basically came out kind of similar, to be honest.
So, amusingly, as I look at this post from September of 2009, where you discussed all the versions of light, the very first comment is by this guy named Paul, who talks about specifically having done those experiments.
Oh, no.
Not that strongly, but specifically in my comment, I'm relating the experience of having done reenactment. So for a little while, I was into Revolutionary War reenactment. And so we would go to campsites where there's no natural light, and I would have things like a lantern to see by. Right. And I was shocked at how short the vision of that was. I literally had a lantern that I was holding down at my feet, because I was holding at my feet just so that I could see enough of the ground that I wasn't worried I was going to step in a hole.
Right.
And I was seeing maybe three steps ahead of me.
Right. Right.
And I was like, geez, you can barely see anything. Like, if there's no natural light and you've just got a lantern, you can barely see anything.
It's interesting because the gentleman, the other guy that did it in the last year, did it indoors. And actually, I was surprised by how big, how far he was claiming he could see stuff, which was like a whole order of magnitude further than I'm used to.
I wonder if that comes down to, like, do you have walls to reflect the light back versus open space that it diffuses in.
And the other thing that I saw in the last year was someone saying, don't hold a light in front of you. Hold it. You got to hold it behind you so that it doesn't light alter your eyes.
So I've used that in my game. So the way traditionally I've run dark vision in BX is to say that you can see in darkness, and it's more like it's more like the current night vision kind of stuff. Yep. So you need maybe a little tiny bit of light at least to see.
Okay.
And unless you see 60 feet, but if some jerk is standing next to you with a torch, nope, you see 20 feet.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's common through a lot of D&Ds. So it's
So I like that. It turns infravision into like an interesting thing the scout can do by getting ahead of the light radius. People start using that as a mechanic of how far ahead of the group do you go? Well, I go 30 feet, so I'm out of the light.
So for me, 20 feet seems too small. So at the point when, like, you have, you know, again, like at HelgaCon, sometimes I'll have 9 or 10 players at the table, right?
Yep.
And if the light is 20 feet, you start to get to this point whereby the person holding the light is further away from the front of the party.
Yep. And I think that's realistic. So I think that, A, that's why you prefer a lantern over a torch.
Yeah.
You want the extra radius. B, you have a big group of people. One guy in the middle holding a torch is not sufficient light. You probably want multiple torches. And that strikes me as more accurate. You know, it feels good. And generally what I'm after here is exactly what I've put as my background image here of this murky, dark, poorly lit space with pools of light and pools of darkness, and it's spooky and creepy. And I try to infuse that in my description as you're walking down the hallways. And then when I'm confronted with a party of, like, all elves, I lose my ability to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let me relate this now. Here's my next piece of research. Let's look at specifically how this applies to a real dungeon.
Great.
So this is a map from B4. This is tier 2, if anybody's following along. So
Lost City by Cook? Mulvey?
Good question.
You talk and I'll look that up.
Great. I picked this one because I wanted a B series, and I started with, like, B1, and I went, oh god, B1 has those crazy hallways, and I don't want to deal with that. And then I went, B2's all caves. Shit, okay. And B4 is where I ended up. I liked this map because if we look at the easternmost passage, the one that runs north-south along the right side of the page, and you imagine your party is right there at the intersection of the T, and you're trying to describe to them what do they see. Their range of vision changes it dramatically. So if they have 30-foot light, or 20-foot or 30-foot light, I can say, great, you can see to the west, maybe all the way to the end of that hallway. You can see a door on the right, then a door on the left, and maybe the shadowy outline of a door at the end of the hall. To the north, the passage extends at least 30 feet and then disappears into darkness. To the south, the passageway extends 30 feet and disappears into darkness.
Yeah.
So now at this point, like, okay, incomplete information, interesting, maybe they'll explore in any one of those directions. With 60 feet, they can see the entirety of that north-south passage. Number one, they can see that that northern passage dead ends, and they're probably going to think that there's obviously must be a secret door down there, and I start to wonder, why did the designers make this 50-foot passage that goes nowhere? It's weird, and they're going to think it's weird, but let's ignore that. To the south, I can see all the way 60 feet down, I can see the two doors, and then I can see the interesting statue at the end. Okay, let's talk about the statue at the end, because then I looked up the description of the statue. It's a statue of Gorm. Sorry, spoilers, folks, for if you haven't read before. It's a statue of Gorm, and it's made of wood, and it's painted gold. Because let's screw with the players a bit and make them think there's a golden statue at the end. And here's my question. Can players with infravision detect that it's gold? Are they tricked by that? Not tricked by that? I'm not sure.
Great argument. great argument. The difference in what you're going to describe looking around the corner in the two cases is a really great example.
It is huge. And I see it again and again and again. Let's look at room 6 right there in the middle. If I have 60-foot infravision, I can see the whole room. But if I have 20 or 30 feet of light, I can't. The corners are shadowed in darkness. In the center of the room, there are these three ladders. The text tells me at the base of which each is a beetle which emits light in a 10-foot radius.
Oh,
that's really spooky and interesting if I have poor light. But if I have infravision, I just see the whole room. Am I describing the beetles? Can you tell that they're beetles? Right? Again, like the fact that they have little lights that they're in. I've stumped Dan. This is my problem with infravision. So from my perspective, I generally avoided the problem because typically my players never make all infravision characters. So some jerk is going to spoil it. Someone's going to play the human or the hobbit who doesn't have infravision. And they're going to hold a torch or a lantern and thus spoil everyone else's infravision. And it totally relegates infravision down to just maybe sometimes we send a scout ahead.
Right.
And that's the only time infravision is ever used. And I like that.
Right.
Although, having done all this research now, I'd be tempted to just go, ODD says no. No infravision for anyone.
Yeah, and, for 8 months it said that. It said it right before it, and it said it in the supplement 8 months later. So there's an eight-month window where it arguably said no. Apparently a lot of people like that. A lot of OD&D players, like it murky, demand a light source, all that kind of thing. So here's my question, and what, I could say what I'm currently doing, but I'm going to skip that for now. So one of the things that surprised me as a player in your game is how much you like the BX rules and how much your understanding is usually coming out of the BX rules a lot. Mm-hmm. So clearly in BX, it clearly says these folks have infravision, they work perfectly fine in 60 feet light. So my question is, at what point did you switch? Like, how have you always played like that, or was it a recent switch?
That's a good question. Historically, when I came back to original edition when I came back to old school D&D back in around 2008, 2009, I think I originally started with Labyrinth Lord, which probably includes threeisms in it, right? I'm going to go out on a limb, having not actually looked at the text, and say, I bet it says dark vision, not infravision, in Labyrinth Lord.
Gotcha.
Now, at some point, I got irritated by Labyrinth Lord and its threeisms, and I went, you know what? I want the original. The whole point of Labyrinth Lord is you don't have the original BX at hand. I do have the original BX at hand. I'm just going to dump Labyrinth Lord and go back to straight pure BX. I suspect...
I'm gonna just drop in here. I'm looking at Labyrinth Lord. The answer is no.
No.
They have infravision just exactly like old school D&D, and dark vision does not appear in the text.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. There you go. Okay. Good. Because I do have vague recollection.
Maybe there's a different version, but that's what I'm looking at right here.
Yeah. I do have vague recollection of having dealt with this problem early on when I first started doing old school, and eventually saying, you know what, this is one case where I like what the newer editions have done, and I'm gonna pull that in. Okay. So there you go.
Okay. And were you aware? So, of course, I'm surprised by how many people nowadays use the term dark vision when that's a new school-y type thing.
Yeah. Well, here's a funny anecdote for you. Just over the weekend, not the weekend, a couple days ago. God, sorry. I've been traveling so much. My concept of time is poor. Very recently, I was running a game, an OD&D game for a small group of coworkers. Because we were in a hotel traveling for business and had nothing better to do. So we said, let's play some D&D, like you do. And I said, sure, I brought stuff. I'll run something. Really? I had one player whose sole experience is 4th and 5th. Actually, I think he's played some 3-5. I think he had played some 3-5. But most of experience was 4th and 5th. He looked at the character sheet, which came from my OED character generator, because I made some pre-gens. And that follows pure OD&D stuff. So for dwarves and elves, it says infravision 60 feet on the character sheet. And he said, what's infravision?
Yeah.
Like, he had never heard the term.
Yeah, that's... you got to accept that, Avi. You got to accept that. But to me, it's a little startling to deal with that. Yeah, fascinating.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think...
How did you deal with that?
Oh, well, I told him... So my usual thing is to say... Let's see, I think... At that point, again, I was like, I don't feel like dealing with it. I'll just continue to rule as I was ruling 2 weeks ago at my home game. So I said, it's you know, you can see the heat sources. Infravision is like the movie Predator.
Yeah.
Thermal visioning. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. So I think newer school folks are used to dark vision or, you know, low light vision. We have a listener here is talking about low light, which lets you see in dim light, but not total darkness. I agree with that. I don't like total, like, I can see fine in total darkness.
Is that actually true? Because when I don't have the books here, but I have a quick start.
I have to play it. Fifth edition player's handbook right here. I'll take a look.
And so.
Yeah.
What if,
I don't know what fourth did, honestly, and I don't have the fourth book handy to look it up. Regardless, I do like that definition. If you remember, that was our sticking point. Was originally somebody, I said, do you have any light sources at all? Because it's a complete darkness here, and you need a little light to see. And I immediately got the, what? What? No, infravision, total darkness, can see fine.
So with my quick start rules for fourth, it just says low light vision in the end, and I don't have a definition for that. I will point out that even in fifth, right? So that kind of surprises me because in fifth, it says they can see dimly with no light whatsoever.
Yep.
For dwarves.
Although dimly is ill-defined, right? Does that mean like you can barely see, or you can see just fine in 30 feet or fine in 60 feet?
Right.
Yeah. So
it's for some reason it really resists having a definitive ruling.
Yep.
In the books, it just continually seems to ping pong and be ambiguous no matter how you try to nail that down.
Yep, I completely
agree. Interesting.
Agree.
Thank you for the comment, because I saw this thing about low light vision in fourth and I didn't know what that meant.
I feel like there wasn't that a third and a thing in third where like maybe some races had low light because it wasn't it was a not as good as dark vision.
Precisely correct. Yeah, starting with third, dwarves get dark vision. They can see in the dark in monochrome perfectly fine. Elves get low light, which is mostly just for outdoors, and if they're underground with no light, then they're blind. Yeah, totally right.
See, and it's my problem is, again, to my...
And that phrasing has been maintained, right? So since they did it in a third edition, saying that dwarves have dark vision and elves have low light has been consistent all since then.
Yeah. So my problem continues to be simply this, that dungeon design does not take it into account at all. As I was showing in the B4 map, and as I've seen in countless... You like think of the classic trope of you walk into a cave, there's a big pool of water in the cave, and deep in the water somewhere you can see the glint of something metallic. right? That's the, like, I don't know, I've seen that description 20 times in modules, right? And the idea is like, oh, I'm going to entice the players, and maybe it's coins, but maybe it's a trap, or maybe it's the scales of an evil monster. How does that work with InfraVision? Does anything reflect, right? There's no light to reflect. So nothing glints? Do I see anything? I don't know.
Right.
Yeah.
So now we're back at like the second edition. Like, you could hand wave it and just say it's normal, or you could do scientific and make a decision about it.
I mean, I found myself even like hemming and hawing over that in our game, in our, you know, our weekend game, where I had something, I think I started to say, oh, something glints in your, oh no, you don't have any light. No clue. I don't know what to do.
Let me pitch out an option. And I don't know. So when in original D&D first supplement, boy, those are great comments.
Dan's distracted by our comments.
So in original D&D supplement one, when it explicitly says dwarves and elves, they get InfraVision for player characters at the end. What it technically says is they can see monsters up to 60 feet away.
Right.
So would you
That's the problem with it, is that, like, who cares where you can see monsters? Like, once we're in combat, I feel like we've resolved the problem. The real problem for me is exploration. When I'm wandering down the dark hallway, can I see anything at all? Do I see doors?
Okay, so hypothetically for this interpretation, let's say the answer to all that is mostly no, unless there's a monster 30 feet away about to jump at you.
Well, that's pretty interesting, I guess. I'd give that a try. Sure. I would try that out. Sure. Why not?
Yeah. Interesting. And, you know, for what it's worth, I actually looked at a YouTube video of a guy using a thermal imaging camera going through a cavey tunnel the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy, you know, the gentleman exploring in front of him was like, you know, a halogen lamp light with his body heat. And the rest of the tunnel was kind of like a big purpley blur.
Yep.
So maybe that's both realistic and maybe gameable.
I will start to now ask the questions of, well, who can see who, right?
Right.
Okay, if it's thermal imaging, does it penetrate an invisibility spell?
No.
Okay.
I'm just going to throw out what my answers would be.
Yeah, I know. I agree with that. But, like, I feel like I'm going to get those questions. It's similar to the, like, can I use detect magic to spot an invisible foe?
Yes.
You think yes?
Well, I think yes-ish.
Yeah. Interesting. Huh? Interesting. And then people will claim, like, well, the problem with a light, right, is that, yes, maybe a torch only illuminates 20 feet, but it's visible from super far away, right? So, so bad guys are going to see me coming, and so the only way I'm going to get drop on bad guys is if I don't carry a light source.
Yeah.
So now we're going to blunder through the darkness. And then I start wondering, well, what bad guys have torches, right? Like, I feel like most classic depictions of goblins in their caves, there are torches, but why? Why would there be torches?
And that right there is a big shift from, you know, that Gygax made from, like, Tolkien or something like that. You're totally right that commonly you see dwarves, goblins like that. Like, let me, without talking about that, like, how would you, like in your game, how does a chimera get around the dungeon? So chimera doesn't have, you know, thumbs. I would assume isn't making torches, but presume is like getting around the dungeon, finding food. Okay. In your games, how do like monstrosities like that navigate?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I would start to maybe give them improved other senses, right? Maybe like a bat, it echolocates. Maybe it has a heightened sense of smell and can smell out its foes.
Yeah. So that's, for what it's worth, a couple of blogs that have springboarded out of our game are basically going in that direction. For me, it starts to be like, boy, now I'm doing like major surgery on classic D&D stuff, which starts to make me uncomfortable. But that does seem to be the most obvious interpretation, that everything's doing that.
Yeah, and I don't know. I'm trying to think of real world cases where this is even come up. Because usually I'd like to use humanoids a lot. Let's see. Certainly in our game that we just played recently, there were some cases of like some cockatrices and some giant scorpions. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they're since they're so animalistic, a somewhat erratic behavior seems reasonable. Actually, honestly, I'm starting to really dig this notion of like, yeah, InfraVision gives you heat signatures, and so it's really only useful for finding other creatures.
See,
And
right.
so it
See, I feel
bumbles
like
about in the
that's.
dark until it happens to see some prey, and then it goes for it.
Right. And I mean, I won't say that's I don't think that's a common interpretation, but technically, original D&D supplement, technically that's what the verbiage is. You
I
can
like
see
it.
monsters.
Kind of like it. Kind of like that. I might run
Well,
with that.
yeah, that's I yeah, I was wondering if that was if that might be an interesting thing or
Yeah.
not.
Yeah, again, most of my complaints about it, and I was like on the line here of just saying, let's just axe the whole thing. Just no. And then maybe even say like it's only for weirdo creature monsters, right? So chimeras and giant scorpions can have infravision. Goblins don't, dwarves don't, elves don't.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so I was
That's
kind of tempted to do that. But maybe just turn it into pure like, yeah, you can see bodies, but
And I mean, I like I would be ha I would be even happy to like put a limit that like it has to be legitimately hot-blooded. So like snake doesn't work so well. Undead, totally invisible to InfraVision. Ha. Have that.
That's
Suck
fantastic.
on that,
Yeah,
players.
definitely. It really reduces the effectiveness of, of InfraVision, but also then allows me to do something that I often forget to do, which is in underground places inhabited by creatures, maybe put some torches, maybe show some signs of life by having areas that are lit because something was in there recently.
Yeah, it's an interesting. You know, it's an, and I'll say that, you know, so in our game, you know, we were using pyrotechnics all the time as one of our major, you know, advantageous things. And it that spell originally obviously comes from when Gandalf in The Hobbit freed the prisoners from the goblins in the mountains. And the original spell says you've got to cast it on an existing fire like a campfire. And so under standard D&D rules where everybody has InfraVision, when I read that, I was like, well, where is there going to be a fire? Nobody, there isn't any fire in any dungeon because nobody needs it. And that's actually why, for our house rules, I yanked that part out. And now you can use it anywhere, and now it's super
But
powerful.
wouldn't most parties, again, assuming there's at least one human or hobbit in there, be carrying a torch?
Yeah, but do you want to cast pyrotechnics on your party?
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, so the next thing is like, you know, now you're chucking torches. So every time you want to cast pyrotechnics, someone's got to chuck a torch. And I'm like, that doesn't look like any other spell to have to, you know, make your own trigger point.
I mean, honestly, maybe the spell becomes more interesting when you do have goblins and orcs and such carrying torches.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I'm kind of uncomfortable because in all my years, you know, playing classic D&D, I have never, you know, it never, everybody can just see in the dark. And elves and dwarves can just see normally in the dark. And I've never played a game in, you know, with any other modification of that. And, you know, for 30 years, it hadn't even crossed my mind, so.
I was reading somebody else's blog post this morning. It was a little dated, and unfortunately, I already can't remember who posted this, so apologies. But was proposing sort of like trying to figure out the problem of dark vision, infravision. What the hell is it? How does it work?
Right.
Throughout, his notion was that like most gamers hand wave past it. Like
Yeah.
light, the question of light is simply who's carrying the light source? Okay, somebody that person can't have a thing in their other hand,
Right.
and then thereafter it's ignored, and the torch burns forever, and we never deal with it. And I just described the dungeon the way I want to describe the dungeon. I assume you guys can see. Not going to think about it.
Yeah, and you know, I think that's probably true. I think probably for logistical reasons is like it's kind of hard for like I've gone through a lot of iterations of ways of trying to remind myself about that. Like, you know, have a place on an index card to know who's carrying the light, and then I'd lose the index card. or a note to make sure that people account for those resources at the end of the session. Like if it's torches, you used up four of them, and if it's a lamp, you just used up one bottle of oil, and then I forget about that.
You know, for a long time when I was running BX, I would have a turn counter stuck to the top, and I would just flip turns as they went. Now, this it was easier in BX because of 10-minute turns, which it does some weird things to some spells, which is honestly why I stopped doing it, because some spells ended up lasting ridiculously long, which was not pleasant. But and I would always track that, and it was actually one of the things I really liked about exploration and the effects of light and the effects of like having a torch or a lantern is I knew when the torches were going to run out, and I was looking at the graph paper and saying, okay, you can see three squares. And I was using that to do my, you know, my description of the dungeon.
I was a little surprised that you weren't using your 10-minute turn counter in our last game. I think that was the first time I saw you not using.
I haven't used it in a long time now, chiefly because of not having figured out how to deal with 10-minute turns. Like 10 minutes is a great unit of time measurement for the exploration mode. But then when you have spells that are lasting, you know, 2d6 turns, and you go, oh my God, this lasts for 2 hours? It gets weird.
Just this morning, I was seeing a guy on these OD&D discussions that was attempting to make an argument, attempting to say that there have to be exploration turns and there's combat turns, and they're two different things. And the exploration turns are 10 minutes, and the combat turns are 1 minute. And you can actually see that kind of like in Holmes Basic, it sort of starts to imply that. So many people agree that there's an awkwardness there.
I don't think I feel like I need to do that. Probably what I just need to do is fix durations of spells. Now, I think maybe you've already done this for me, right? Book of Spells talks about durations in terms of like minutes and hours and stuff, right?
Correct.
Although no, it does in some cases use turns. Does it use the word
Yeah,
turns occasionally to mean minutes?
the spell descriptors all say turns, and the preface says, I assume a turn's 1 minute. If you want to do something else, that's anybody.
Kind of want to scrub your text and turn all instances of the word turns to minutes. That way, just turns just doesn't appear in there.
Well, and replace them with feet. And I was wondering if that ever crosses your mind or not.
I usually have to explain at the table what inches means, and especially at conventions, there's always somebody who thinks that like the range of the spell is, you know, less than a foot. Like,
Yeah,
no.
I'll say in the last couple of weeks in my game, I've attempted to start to use the word paces. So I've started to describe encounters and stuff in terms of paces, where a pace is an inch is 5 feet.
I would use feet. It's what we measure things in. It's what we're used to.
And hello to all of our non-American viewers who are going to jump in and say, I want to use meters.
Yep. I appreciate your plight. I do. But I mean, I don't know. Have you ever seen a module that says each square of this graph paper is 3 meters?
No, not for D&D. Go to a sci-fi game and then yes.
Yeah, you see it more in Warhammer Fantasy RPG because
Right.
it is you know, European.
Right.
But again, then they often don't do things in those adventures less often take place underground. I'd say
Right.
dungeons
I
are
mean, I will
much
say
more
that with
random.
my paces idea, I'm trying to train my players to recognize that, right? It's not something they recognize the first time I pitch it out, but I'm trying to train them that that's the unit that all the spells and all the movement is in.
And
So,
what's a pace?
1 inch, 5 feet.
5 feet. Okay.
So that's the same unit as all the movement and all the spells.
It's an idea.
So, okay, back to Infravision.
Infravision, sure.
These are great. It's funny that we occasionally think about these same things over and over again. I'll just come out of the box, right? You know, what I ha the funny thing is to bring it back to that blog from 10 years ago of mine that you pointed out that you started with. What I currently have jotted in my margin is a torch or a lamp gives you 30 feet of good light and 60 feet of dim light is actually what I have jotted
That's
down
funny.
now, and that InfraVision just does the same. so that I don't have to like switch back and forth or something like that.
Yeah. So I still think even InfraVision aside, I still think 60 feet's too far.
Yeah, and so I'm leaning towards agreement on that. And so for 30 feet, I'm willing to describe the corridor, the wall, the room, the furniture, and beyond that, maybe there's glistening eyes.
Yeah, sure.
But I wouldn't describe the doors, and I wouldn't describe the statue beyond 30 feet.
But if I'm in the corner of a 40 foot by 40 foot room, looking out into the room, do I know the bounds of the room?
You know what? The truth is, for simplicity, I'll probably just come out of the box and say it, right? In that case, you'd see everything except for the other 10-foot corner. So for simplicity, I just say it's a 40 by 40-foot room.
Okay.
Yeah, to be honest. If it was like a 60-foot room, then I'd start to talk about... this is totally what happened on Friday, right? If it's a 60-foot room, then I say the corners are going out in this direction, and that's as much as you can see, and the players all accept that.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's good. I don't know. There's maybe you want some level of DM fiat at that level, some wiggle room to be able to say, like, you can definitely see up to 30 feet. I'm going to choose on the fly what details between 30 and 60 you do or don't see.
Yeah,
it's not bad. And honestly, the funny thing, what I was not expecting to come out of this discussion is actually I really like the idea now of saying, yes, it's thermal infravision and therefore only useful in detecting warm bodies.
Do you think you're going to test that out in a game, in your next game?
I would love to try it out. I don't think I can get away with doing that in 5th edition.
Okay, yeah, understood.
So it'll have to be the next time I run an OED game. And okay. I don't have one of those on the books, so I don't know when that will be. But yes, I will be looking for an opportunity to test that out.
I think I might possibly test that in my game, too. They usually, there are humans, and they're usually carrying light, and it's not going to instantaneously make a difference. But I actually might wave my hand of universal cosmic continuity and possibly try that out in my game, too.
Cool. Well, I'd be very curious to hear what you discover.
Yeah. Yeah. We should try that.
Great. Great. Feels like we're wrapping things up. Do you have anything else to add about InfraVision? Any final thoughts?
Now it becomes more problematic for me. Like for a long time, I was just like, elves and dwarves, they see in the dark. Pretty much that's it. I can explain it with thermal vision if you force it to me, force me to do that. And I see a lot of reasons why people may not want that. The scientific detail, the interruption of mythology, like with Tolkien, a bunch of, people are posting art of dwarves carrying torches and they say they want to see that.
Yeah.
Now I'm troubled by it.
Funny. You've changed your mind.
Well, you productive challenge, I guess that's what we're supposed to say it in the academic community.
Excellent.
I also want to be consistent. Like, I don't want players to come to the table and go, I have no idea what you're talking about, right? I want a game that if they played someplace else, it's consistent and complementary, that they can come in and recognize this as a D&D that they recognize and want to participate with. So I also want to find something that's consistent with other people, and there's this huge variation that I'm a little bit surprised by recently.
Well, I'm certainly surprised at our outcome here, because I was ready to be on the verge of screw it, it's gone, out, I'm writing it out, it goes with clerics.
I was hoping that there might be a middle ground. Like, I was honestly hoping that we could have a discussion. Yeah. We might, between you and me, might find a middle ground. We could at least test. Because I want players to be able to come from my game to your game, without a lot of friction.
Right. Honestly. Yep. Yeah. Okay. So cool. We'll do some experiments and we will report back to you viewers what we discover. If you have any thoughts on how you've used InfraVision or Dark Vision or what your expectations are, or light sources or detection, general visibility of things and how that impacts both exploration and combat, love to hear it. Please leave us some comments below. May fuel a future discussion for us.
Quite likely, because I think we have light, I think we have blindness, I think we have, like I have a blog post about blind spellcasters today that caused some contention. And so that's great. So you can follow Paul and myself as Wandering DMs on YouTube and Twitter and Twitch under the handle Wandering DMs. And we are now live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern time. So please come back in 1 week. And we love seeing your comments and questions. And so join us, please, for another thought-provoking discussion at that time. And we will talk to you next time.
See you then.